We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Tommy Hottovy, breaking down the starting rotation and bullpen on the north side with Mully and Hall.
I'm here for one reason. I want to help these guys get better, and we want to win baseball games.
Tommy Hottovy on 670 The Score.
Tommy. Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to the Cubs pitching coach, Tommy Hottovy, and he joins us now on the guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Good morning. How are you?
We're doing really well, and it's great to catch up with you. It's been such a wild year. You know, we saw you guys play really well earlier in the year. We know what happened with the losses and the trade deadline, and then that was a struggle, and now here you are, and you're back to playing pretty well. It's been pretty extraordinary to see the sort of revival of your team late in the year here, and I think everybody is just kind of hopeful that there's going to be a lot of carryover into the offseason and into next year.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of a transition period there, you know, when we were kind of transitioning once we know we lost some guys and we're kind of shifting gears. But it's been really fun to watch guys get opportunities and take those opportunities, take advantage of them and start to thrive in them and have fun. I looked at it the other day. I think in the last month we're 14-12 and you know, guys are playing well. Like, wasn't fun to lose the game last night the way we lost it when the offense kept fighting back, and it was kind of a boxing match. It was blow after blow. One team hit the homer, next team hit the homer, and you're kind of going back and forth there. But it's just fun seeing these guys compete. It's fun being part of a group like this. And you never know what the future holds with your careers, you know, for players. So take advantage of it. Take advantage of those opportunities. It's fun seeing guys do that.
So, Tommy, speaking of the future, let's look at a guy like Alec Mills, how much he has helped himself with the kind of season that he has had. I think two things I wonder. Number one, big picture, what has he done for his future this season? And number two, take us through last night, because it was a difficult one for Millsy, as you say. He didn't want to come out of the game. He shook his head, and it was obvious he didn't. And he explained afterward that sometimes, you know, he let the emotions get the best of him, and that was an example. Is that an acceptable response from him in terms of, you know, this is a guy that has been pretty dependable for you this season?
Right. I think, you know, the first part of that, I think he's proven time and time again that he can start at the major league level and be a very consistent, reliable major league starter. I think, you know, his value for us early in the year was his ability to go back and forth and be able to be a swing man, be a long guy, pitch some short stints, you know, pop into the rotation. But for him, I think personally, I think this is the best role for him, in my opinion. And again, like I said, he's proven that he can do it against some really tough lineups that he's seen over the last, you know, month and a half. You know, he's a competitor. These guys all want to be out there competing, and part of what Millsy, where he wants to get to finish the season, he knows he still has some things he wants to work on. He knows he has some things he wants to get better. And part of that development for him is being able to go as deep into games as he possibly can. And that's, I think, what gets him, what he was frustrated about last night, was the fact that he wasn't, you know, able or allowed to do that. And that's part of the game. Guys are never happy when they come out of the game, whether they come out of the game, you know, in the fourth, and they come out after 8 1/3 shutout against the White Sox. You know, I mean, it's no matter when that happens, you're frustrated because you want to give the team a good start, a solid start deep into a game, and then get to your bullpen later. So, I mean, these guys are competitors. They want to get better every time out, and they want to keep working. And he's been putting in some really good work lately. He's in a good place mentally and physically, and these guys just want to finish strong. And I think, you know, you're going to see these guys continue to push over these last 3 weeks and continue to get better.
You know, we've seen that you're starting to find some pretty good answers in the bullpen and some players that you feel good about and maybe good about going into next year as well. I know Rowan Wick got the save in the game on Tuesday. We've seen Cody Hoyer look pretty good when he's been used. You've started to really kind of get that bullpen together.
Yeah, I think for each guy, there's if you look at the path to success so far, it's been way different. You know, that's the fun part of when you get an influx of new faces or young talent or guys coming off injury. Each one's got their own path, and so trying to get them on the right ship and get things headed in the direction that they needed to go for them to start to be successful becomes a challenge because it's not the same for everybody. You've got Roe Wick coming off of, you know, an injury, Cody Hoyer coming to a new organization, a slew of young arms coming up to pitch in the big leagues for the first time. You know, each guy's got a kind of a different path. And you know, Roe Wick has really battled, you know, for a lot of the season, trying to get to a point to where he felt good again. And what he kind of talked about it last night, I believe, in the media, was just talking about how before he was just athletic enough, he could just rip with his upper body to you know, to attack the strike zone and be aggressive and throw hard. And with the oblique injury, it's really had to teach him how to use his legs more effectively and efficiently. And that's helped protect what he felt like he injured before. And he feels like he's becoming a better version of himself because of it. And sometimes those injuries cause you to make minor changes that actually will benefit you more in the long run than they will just to come back and be healthy. I think he's done a great job of that. And then also just you see the attack mode that he gets into when he gets on a run. It's just relentless. He's coming at you. It's fun to watch. It's fun to be a part of. I'll tell you that, you know, when you've got pitchers like that going out there and just absolutely attacking the strike zone. And that's been fun to watch for him. And, you know, we just want to keep putting guys in as many opportunities as we can to give them that experience. And the young guys, I think Scott Efros coming in and pitching in the eighth inning of the game the other night, you know, absolutely going right through guys and the big punch out to Harper there too. It's like giving guys those opportunities, letting them thrive, letting them learn. That's part of what the process we're in now, but we're also winning games through that process. It's been fun.
Question about two guys on opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of what you want to see from them and maybe their final couple starts, or in terms of Kyle Hendricks, who doesn't have anything to prove, but I imagine he still wants to finish strong heading into next season with momentum. And then Keegan Thompson, who has been injured, but apparently in Philadelphia did throw a simulated game and apparently will be back throwing a bullpen session tomorrow.
Yeah, with Kyle, I think the number one thing we always want to do with him is just finish strong and finish healthy, you know, as long as he's feeling good and doesn't have any issues or any concerns that we would have, then he wants to finish this thing and see it through. He's, you know, really focused on a couple of things that just on the mental side, things he wants to continue to work on during starts, continue to be able to focus and control some outings, control some traffic, control when things start to get sped up, if there's a few hits and things like that. He wants to keep focused on that. And then just a couple of more mechanical things we want to clean up. And part of the process when you're a starter is knowing how to make adjustments. And each year it's a little different. Mechanics change ever so slightly, but things become different, or you learn different ways to make those adjustments. If you try to make adjustments the same way over and over and over again, sometimes it you know, either it doesn't work or it becomes too robotic and you lose feel for what you're trying to do pitch wise. So I think there's just a lot he still wants to accomplish, wants to finish strong and healthy. And obviously Kyle's going to be a big part of what we do here in the future. With Keegan, you know, he was dealing with just some general fatigue, shoulder fatigue. Didn't feel like it was that important to like push him through it at the time. He's been feeling really good lately through a bullpen. A couple days ago, he's going to do another light one on Friday. And then hopefully if we get through all that, we'll be ready to roll in the game, you know, soon after. And for Keegan, I think just getting back to being the version of what we saw earlier in the year when he was coming out of the bullpen, attacking the strike zone, really the command of all the pitches was never been something that he ever, you know, ever had to deal with. It was something he always could command pitches really well. And we saw a few of those outings, you know, lately that he just was scattered at times and just wasn't able to make those adjustments. So we've cleaned up a few things, made a few minor mechanical tweaks that I think will help him be more efficient. That's the one thing as a starter. As a reliever, you can get by with some lack in mechanics and lack in command because you're going to go through two innings and maybe one time through the order and come right at guys. But as a starter, you have to be able to make those adjustments. You have to be able to command the baseball, and a lot of command issues come from mechanics. So he's working hard. It's going to be fun to see him push kind of these last 2 weeks of the season. And yeah, I'd barring anything going on, you know, from his next light bullpen, I feel like we'll see him, yeah, here in the near future.
You know, obviously David Ross was out for a little bit there with COVID, and then we saw Andy Green kind of take over, and then we saw him thrown out of a game. What was all of that like with the kind of rotating manager thing? It was pretty wild.
Yeah, it was. You know, it's those days where we show up for the day game, and we find out. So you don't have a lot of time to prep to not have Rossi number one, you know, and then in the, I believe it was like fifth or sixth, Greeny gets tossed, and now we're in complete scramble mode, trying to piece it together, you know, right away. But it was fun. I think everybody came together. It was really fun to see everybody really take ownership in their department. And I kind of just stepped up and said, look, I'll handle the pitching stuff with Borzy, Post, you and Valleca, you guys handle the hitting stuff. Any hitting moves you guys want to make, let me know. You know, we'll get him done. Willie Harris took over all the in-game, you know, stuff on the bases with signs and things he wanted to do. He helped with all the double switch moves. It was, you know, it's fun just kind of seeing all those guys come together. No one backed down from that moment. Everybody stepped up and wanted to do more. And that's what you want from a group that's been together all year. It's a fun group to be around. And yeah, it's something you never expect going into a game like that. But you know, everybody stepped up, and it was a fun day. You know, we won the game, so that was the most important thing.
All right, Tommy, I have kind of a meatball question for you, but humor me. So
yes.
Craig Kimbrel has struggled since going to the White Sox, and whether it's this specific example or not, like, would you ever be in a position, does this happen in baseball where, you know, Ethan Katz would call you or communicate with you like, hey, you know, what worked? Because what worked with the Cubs is not working with the White Sox. And do coaches have this free exchange or flow with friends in the business because of the fraternity, or is there too many competitive advantages that might be gained and you want to protect, you know, that information or that kind of those kind of secrets, if you will?
Yeah, you know, it's not quite a meatball question. That's a good question.
I think
you know, it really depends. If there's guys that have relationships or have, you know, spent significant time or together or been around each other, you might have a little bit more open communication. You also have organizations that really believe in the way they do things and want to be problem solvers and try to figure it out. There's plenty of times I've talked to pitching coaches about guys that either got traded or signed or gone over, and I've just given them, you don't really, you don't really give them like, hey, you need to do this with this guy and this with this guy. Most of the time, it's just kind of a download of information, you know. And I think in those moments, and I've been there as a coach too, you get so consumed with trying to help guys figure it out and find the answer. It's, you know, you get deep into what you're doing in your own organization. So I will say too, there's been a lot of times, you know, especially after we played the White Sox, when you know you're not going to play them anymore and you see Craig and Tep and those guys, you definitely times you get texts from guys saying like, hey, I know we're not going to play you guys anymore. Will you just take a look at me and see what you got? You know, those relationships, like I know CY had really good relationships with those guys out in the bullpen. And I know him and Craig, you know, have stayed in touch and you're going to get conversations and texts from guys just like, hey, what do you got on this? Just as another opinion. It's never a malice intent, never anything that you're trying to overstep boundaries, but you know, you form relationships with guys, you know, and you care about them. You want to see them succeed. So, you know, I think for Craig too, he got into such a good rhythm here with his routine and the times he was coming in the game and everything he was working on. It became very methodical because he knew what he was going to do every day. When you get thrown into a new organization, that's going to change a lot. You get new coaches and new situations. Then you get thrown into a whole different plan of when you're coming into the ball game, you know, and not pitching the ninth consistently. And so I think there's just some adjustment period for him. I think he's still a guy you're going to want competing for you in the postseason and pitching huge innings. And, you know, I trust Craig to get to that point and really be a weapon for the, you know, the White Sox down the stretch.
Thanks a ton, Tommy. Great catching up with you. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tommy.
Guys, appreciate it. Yep. Great talking to you.
Take care.
So if I'm right here, David, we know that there was no Alexander Haig moment when the manager go round was going on.
And we
know that Craig Kimbrel would be welcomed back into the pitching lab, right? They'd let him duck in there for a little bit, please.
Anytime.
God. Okay. Yep. Making sure. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw, The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I got a chance to go against them last year in Cincinnati, which it was obviously felt a lot different being there as the away team rather than the home team, being in a different locker room and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, luckily I kind of got that out of the way last year, and now I'm just focused on doing what we can to win the game.
You don't feel that little bit of extra tugging at you anymore going up against your old team?
Well, I wouldn't say that, but I think, you know, I got to play him last year too, which was nice.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Skull. That's Andy Dalton. He was a celebrated hero when he went back to Cincy last year and he beat him 30-7 with Dallas, and now he will welcome them to Chicago. And as I said earlier, David, I think the only chance he has to be kind of the most popular quarterback in town is, I guess, if he's the backup, right? Isn't the backup always the most popular quarterback in town? He's never going to be more popular than Justin Fields, and unfortunately, he won't get the same kind of reaction from the Bears fans at Soldier Field that he got back in Cincinnati.
The only way that Andy Dalton's going to be the most popular quarterback in town is if he's traded somewhere and for some reason is the backup people want to see. He doesn't have a prayer of becoming the most popular quarterback in Chicago because Justin Fields is one of the most popular quarterbacks in the National Football League. If you look at jersey sales and just his aura, almost like there is a popularity there that is he's yet to earn in the NFL, but there's an excitement, there's an anticipation, there's a lot riding on seeing him play. I don't know if that will be, it won't be Sunday in terms of a start, but I think that we'll see him in spurts, and Dalton will be the starter, and on the other side of the field will be another guy who's created his own share of excitement in Cincinnati, Joe Burrow, and former teammate of Andy Dalton. They were teammates for a week.
well, that's what happens when you draft a young guy.
And then, you know what, Molly? I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing Joe Burrow in person. I like the way that he has come back from the injury. I think that it was a nervous moment for Bengals fans and NFL fans seeing him get sacked on Sunday against the Vikings, come off, limp off, and go to the exercise bike. He's going to be okay. Reminds you, though, how tenuous his recovery is and how quick it has been. He played 10 games last year, and he went down in week 11 with a season-ending ACL and MCL injury and tear. He's coming back. And, Molly, I just ask you this. So he was sacked 32 times and hit 42 times in 10 games last season. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot for a young quarterback, a prized possession. Do you look at him, and do you think that teams like the Bears, who have young quarterbacks, do you think they look at examples like Burrow, guys who, you know, suffered injuries because they were in harm's way sooner rather than later? Does that give them any pause when they're deciding when to play their own quarterback, their own young franchise guy?
Well, I think it might, and I think it probably should. I think that what's pretty incredible, if you watch, I watched a little bit of that game, and Joe Burrow, I mean, he didn't look like a guy that got hit too many times. He didn't look like a guy who shied away from contact or was worried about protecting himself. He looked like a guy who's a remarkably accurate passer who got the ball, who took a hit to get the ball out, who understood the price that he had to pay. And I didn't see his eye level drop. I didn't see him worried about anything. I saw him looking downfield and passing downfield, and you know, he is a really accurate passer, and I think that accuracy is the thing that you really can't teach, and it's pretty extraordinary. He was like Mr. Ohio football and did not get a lot of interest from schools. I think he had an offer from Ohio, not Ohio State, but Ohio. Because his dad went there and there were some connections. And then when Ohio State jumped in, he went for that immediately because that was like the only big time school that was looking at him. And he wound up, you know, in a numbers game there where he just couldn't seem to get over the, remember they had Cardell Jones, they had Barrett who was ahead of him, and Dwayne Haskins came in and was immediately ahead of him. I think he realized that he redshirted as a freshman in 2015, I think it was, and then he realized he wasn't ever going to see the field. So he transfers, and even when he was transferring, there wasn't a ton of interest. LSU kind of came in and immediately, you know, got him some crawfish or whatever, did the whole thing, and he transfers there, and he has this unbelievable – he had to sit out again, and he has this – he graduated in 3 years, David, from Ohio State. So he had a degree. So I guess he didn't sit out. He played then and then won the national championship and had kind of this one-year wonder thing. But
yeah,
it's accuracy. It's the accuracy of his passes that stand out to you.
It's the accuracy, and it's also just the confidence and command and poise that he demonstrates that is remarkable when you look at, frankly, the lack of experience he had coming into the NFL. This looks like a guy who is as polished as a 10-year vet at times, and that's what makes him difficult to blitz. And I think that's what you saw last season, and I think that's what you saw in week one. That's why his passer rating was 150 against the Vikings against the blitz, and why only, you know, two other guys, Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray, had higher passer ratings against the blitz because of that uncommon poise. With Justin Fields, if he were the Bears quarterback, you wouldn't want to blitz him necessarily because you'd be afraid of man coverage and what that would do to his running capability. With Joe Burrow, it's different. He's not as mobile, but he does react quickly, and he knows what he wants to do with the football. That's the kind of progression you've already seen in a young quarterback. That's why I think blitzing him might be a mistake if you're Sean Desai. I don't know that you want to come after this young quarterback because of what he's been able to show you. When teams do, he'll make you pay by making the right decision and processing that information quickly.
Yeah, and again, the reason the Bears have poured as much money into their defensive line as they have, into their front seven as they have, is because they believe they can get home with four players. They believe that they do not have to blitz to get pressure on the quarterback. That is the entire idea behind paying big money for pass rushers. They had Leonard Floyd here, and they didn't feel like he was doing enough on the other side, so they trade him and sign Robert Quinn. And you think, okay, now you got two veteran pass rushers. You got Akeem, who can create havoc in the middle of the line, and then you'll get a big push from Eddie Goldman. And that whole idea was to collapse the pocket and to get to the quarterback by using your front four, which opens up a lot of help defense in the back. So what we saw was very limited pressure on the quarterback and absolutely nothing going right in the back end. So I think the whole principle of how they're built fell apart a little bit in the opener. You can't now decide, well, we're going to blitz to get pressure on the quarterback because of what you just said. This quarterback, you know, the idea of blitzing a young quarterback, good idea. The idea of blitzing this young quarterback, bad idea.
Also because of the way that you have been forced to structure your roster if you're the Bears because of what you just described. Your money and your resources are devoted primarily to your front seven, especially your front four. If you have to abandon your commitment to those front four because they're not doing their jobs and living up to that salary, and you have to, you know, blitz or take more risks, be high risk, high reward, you're putting guys who are lesser paid and lesser proven. Guys like Kendall Vildor, guys like Duke Shelley, if he plays this week instead of Marquis Christian, guys who aren't ready for that challenge. Even Jalen Johnson, still only his second year. I know he started okay against the Rams, but still, you don't want to do that because then you're going to expose your mistakes. And what you kind of have to do if you're Sean Desai is try to find a way to mask that inexperience. That's the idea in having to be intelligent in the way that you approach Joe Burrow.
Absolutely. And let's get to the man himself. His name is Dustin Rhodes. He'll give you an update, and then we're going to bring in Nick Kostos. We'll close it out with Nick.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I want winners.
And home, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. What a delight to welcome in Nick Kostos. He's joining the show, the host of You Better You Bet, an Odyssey Sports betting insider. Insider calls brought to you by Bet River Sportsbook. Check out the daily specials and see what unique bets are waiting for you at BetRivers.com. Also, be sure to listen to You Better You Bet, the podcast, for more of Nick Kostos' fine analysis. Just search You Bet wherever you find your podcasts. And Nick joins us on the guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Nick, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, guys? Great to be on with you today. Happy Football Thursday. How we doing?
Well, we got a big game tonight, and we know that that your neck is on the line because you're going against the football team.
Well, I mean, listen, I hope to be decapitated because I want my team to go 0-17. Also want your guys' team to go 0-17 just so we can get, like, the top two picks in the draft as a Giants fan. But listen, want everyone to get fired, so I'm totally okay with the Giants losing. I'm actually rooting for it. They actually said this morning, the Giants, that got leaked out there, someone in the organization said, if you can't see Daniel Jones' potential, you are blind. Just call me Stevie Wonder, baby, because I can't see it. Hey, no way, no how. But for tonight's game, I actually think it's worth playing the Giants here at anything above a field goal. Just a numbers play, right? Like Taylor Heinicke starting for Washington. It's not Ryan Fitzpatrick. So with the backup quarterback starting, this number should honestly be 3. And if it's 3.5, I think it's a great play on the Giants. So Giants tonight at anything above 3. I also might play a contrarian over. Now, I want to see this total continue to come down. Currently at 40.5, this could close 40, 39.5. If that happens, this could be a buy point for me on the over. This number has moved down so much that I can't look at the under at this point. Probably going to close at 40. And one player prop I like for tonight. And I texted this to your guy, Dustin, yesterday. Now, Dustin is lucky because Dustin gets the prop bets a day in advance when we text. I gave him the CeeDee Lamb winner last Wednesday for Thursday Night Football last week. Yesterday, I gave him one, and the yardage has moved 5 yards already on this guy since then. And that is Washington rookie wide receiver Diami Brown. He's out of North Carolina. One of the reasons why Carolina's like not as good this year in college is because Javonte Williams, Michael Carter, and Diami Brown are now in the NFL. He's a speedster with Curtis Samuel on a short-term IR. He's Washington's number 2. wide receiver. Got a bunch of targets last week. Did not really deliver, but like I think he's got big play potential. Can go over his yardage prop with one catch. So let's play tonight. Diami Brown over 33.5 receiving yards over at the You Better You Bet show sponsor, Bet Rivers.
Nick, you're not going to get a lot of sympathy in Chicago, who just lived through 4 years of Mitch Trubisky, when you complain about Daniel Jones. Just saying.
Well, you do have Justin Fields, though. Like, I got nothing right now. Like, you've
okay.
got your quarterback.
All right. Fair enough. And because of that outlook, you're now getting odds on the first coach to get fired. Matt Nagy's up there. Joe Judge is up there. Are any of these prop bets or any of these bets about the first coach to go worth investing in?
I would have to see like what Urban Meyer's number is. I think like that's one that obviously makes that. Now you have to check the verbiage here. Is it first coach fired or like first coach to like resign or like leave their post? Because I think like that's like an important note there. I feel like it almost has to be Urban, right? Like it can't not be Urban. I feel the Bears have played this pretty intelligently. I think Pace and Nagy actually, and I know that intelligent is not a word that we generally ascribe with those two, but like they're completely selfish. Like the way they're engineering this right now, it's clearly a play to save their own rear ends. You know, they're going to try and leave Dalton in for as long as possible. So when Fields comes in and Fields looks good because he's awesome, it's going to be, wow, like I drafted this guy and Nagy coached him up, right? So let's stick around for next year. So I actually think Nagy and company are going to be safe this year, unfortunately for Bears fans. But I think Urban Meyer is like the only bet to make in that market.
When we talk about the Bears, do you like them in week two? They obviously struggled in the opener.
No.
Okay.
That doesn't...
Do you like the Bengals, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, but I need to get three with Cincinnati. Like, the numbers dip below three. Maybe it'll come back up to three as we move along this week. But currently sitting right now at Bet Rivers, Bears minus 2.5, total 45.5. I'll tell you, like, I do kind of like the over in this game. I need to spend a little more time thinking about it. But Trey Wayne, Cincinnati's number one corner, is unlikely to play. So I think this could be a good spot for Allen Robinson here, bouncing back from what we saw a week ago. And for Cincinnati, like, we saw wide receivers running wide open against the Bears all week last week. Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, Van Jefferson, and obviously on the touchdown. Well, I don't think Cincinnati's going to come out and bomb it like 50 times with Joe Burrow. I do think like when they do pass, like Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd are all in pretty good spots, and Joe Mixon should be able to have success on the ground against this Bears front. So I would never bet the Bears, so it's Bengals or nothing for me as far as the spread is concerned. And I think I like me an over in this game, over 45.5 with the Bengals and Bears. Now, I've got like 10 plays for this week. Neither of those is one of my favorites, but like I do want to give you those thoughts because that is the local team.
Well, what are those favors? Because the underdogs were big winners last week, but what about this week? Is the same trend continuing?
Yeah, I can run through. I have all of them here. I can run through all of them quickly if you'd like.
Please.
All right, let's take Jacksonville +6 against Denver. Pure numbers play. The number can never be 6 in this game, and I know Jacksonville was brutal last week. Teddy Bridgewater looked like Joe Montana against my Giants, but 6 is too much here. It's a bridge too far. So Jaguars +6 against Denver. I'm going to take the points with Atlanta. I bet +12.5 on the road in Tampa. People are going to be like, how could you do that? Well, it's division underdog double digits early in the season, and I think Kyle Pitts and Calvin Ridley both have bounce back spots big time here with the way Dallas attacked Tampa last week. So like we talked about this on You Better You Bet literally on Monday, that Atlanta was going to be a play for us here for the reasons that I laid out. I like the over in that game as well because Tampa's going to be able to score at will. I'm going to take the Minnesota Vikings to cover against Arizona, like overreaction spot to week number one. We've seen this number come down. Vikings at anything above a field goal against Arizona. I like the Titans to cover and maybe win outright against Seattle. Unless Todd Downing is like a complete disaster, the new offensive coordinator, you know, if you out there listening, you play Madden, what do you do with the Titans? You run Derrick Henry, throw to A.J. Brown, throw to Julio Jones. What are the guy getting paid like $1 million a year due? None of those things Sunday against Arizona. Hopefully he gets his head on straight this week. I think the Titans can score a lot in that game. Tennessee +5.5. I like Carolina to win against New Orleans, so take the 3.5. I think Carolina's going to try and outscore the Saints in that game. I like the over in that game. I think the Eagles can maybe win against San Francisco, but we got to monitor the injury report. A lot of players on San Francisco's defense right now. DNP yesterday, Wednesday, questionable for this game on Sunday. Monitor that. But Eagles, anything above a field goal. Patriots are going to slam the Jets laying 5.5. I like the over there. Zach Wilson's either going to score for the Jets or the Patriots. That's good for an over. And the Browns should grind the Texans into sawdust. We're going to lay the 12.5 with Cleveland on Sunday.
Beautiful. Nick, thanks a ton, man. Great catching up with you as always.
Molly,
thanks, Nick.
By the way, Molly, how about Manchester United? Glory to Man U losing to Young Boys in the Champions League. That was fun on Tuesday, man. I enjoyed it. But still wishing you and all the great listeners, Minimal Sweats, Winning Bets, the absolute very best of luck. And let's bet Leeds tomorrow against Newcastle in the old Premier League.
All right, pal. Thank you. That was the host of You Better You Bet and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, Nick Costos. Insider Calls brought to you by Bet River Sportsbook. Bet Rivers, they have exclusive bets waiting for you every day. Check out BetRivers.com. You'll find all of them. And be sure to listen to You Better You Bet podcast. For more of Nick Costos' analysis, just search You Bet wherever you find your podcast. I told you what that United game did to me, David.
And I remember. I remember.
I'm surprised he brought that up. I was wearing a United T-shirt. And glory, Man United. A lot of blue-eyed monsters out there. A lot of jealous people. Angry.
I hear you.
And let me tell you something. They will come back and defeat Young Boys. I told you they had a man sent off. Don't get me going. Last kick of the game. I'm going to kick someone. All right. We got Dan and Layla joining us next. Smully and Hahn, The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.